This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Best bits of today's show. It is a Tuesday, 23rd of April. What have we got for you today? Well, of course, more coverage on the fallout from the rains last week. Sonny Ridgewell, Managing Director of Benepul. Fascinating conversation with him about insurance and claims for damage of homes and cars. What else have we got? Full interview with Hamad Ali. Now, he's the CEO of Dubai Financial Market and Nasdaq Dubai, talking about the IPO boom, including the latest cab off the rank, which is Spinneys, the supermarket chain. And on that subject, crunching the numbers with Sama Degeli, who's the co-head of investment banking for HSBC. They are involved in the Spinneys IPO. The share price and the valuation out today. Finally, talking international stocks, Tesla in particular, having a really rough ride of it this year. Shares down 3% overnight, down 43% so far this year. And this evening, Tuesday evening, is earnings night for Tesla. Jessica Amir, market strategist at the online broker Moomoo. Her thoughts on all of that. First up, though, let's jump straight into those big insurance stories.
How much is it going to cost? That's a question that is doing the rounds at the moment, isn't it? The cost of the floods is one thing that has been discussed by many. Those that know the market, those that don't know the market, none of us really know the figures. But how is it going to affect us moving forward? The impact of the floods and the rainwaters last week, and of course, the damage incurred to property and livelihoods of so many, is that going to inform your insurance policies for the future and where you buy your insurance, among other decisions? One man to ask is the Managing Director of Benepul, who joins us now live in studio, Sonny Ridgewell. Sonny, good to see you. Survived last week. This time last week, we were just going through the first of a series of storms. It's been quite the week, isn't it?
It has indeed. Likewise, Tom, good to see you guys, and thanks for having me. We were lucky at home. I mean, we had a minor water coming through the window, but other than that, all safe and dry, thankfully. We made a very early decision at the office to let everyone work from home before the heavy rains really started to impact, and it was the right decision. In fact, we're still working from home now. There are people in Sharjah and Discovery Gardens still underwater. Anyone that needs the metro line, there's areas disrupted, so we've just said, you know what, keep working from home, stay safe, stay dry, and spare yourself the commute
until it sorts itself out. So the waters have receded a little, the dust has settled a little, as you say, the cleanup continues and the estimate continues as well. What's your reading? Look, there's so many elements to look at. Let's look at it from the automotive side of things first, and motor insurance. What's the word on the street in terms of the number of claims?
So last week, the sort of early estimates were suggesting that there might be as many as 10,000 vehicles written off. Written off would be when the damage to, or the cost to repair a vehicle exceeds 50% of the value of the vehicle. The car's written off, the insurance company will try and recover some of that cost, and the customer's made whole. Early this week, that estimate has multiplied 7 or 8 times. They think it could be a far, far higher number. Claims are still coming in. Loss assessors, tow trucks, recovery vehicles, they're still trying to get access to certain parts of this country. And I don't think we're going to know the full extent, probably for weeks and months to come, but there's suggestions it could be 100,000 vehicles, of which 50% of them will be written off.
I appreciate that that's just one of a number of claims that are going and a number of elements that we're talking about here when it comes to insurance. But it's a good one as a sort of means of example to others as well, just because of the challenge it's facing. Let's start with that sort of loss adjusting and assessment side of things. I mean, we were talking tongue in cheek a minute ago about flying in planefuls of assessors. But what are insurance companies doing to deal with the sheer weight of claims coming through?
So we have insurers in our office every day, pretty much, certainly every week. And over the last week, it's been an opportunity to ask them how they're being affected by events. One very reputable international, global insurer, they have actually been flying in resources from other operations in the region to help with the volume of claims that need to be underwritten and assessed and reviewed. Another very one of the largest national insurers, they've actually employed three independent TPAs, third-party administrators, to help them cope with the volume of claims. I mean, they have almost a million motor vehicle policies themselves, so that they're going to be very, very busy indeed. So they are sort of being called to action and taking the necessary steps very quickly, which is great to see.
We've talked automotive, but let's talk wider impact if we can. Businesses, insured, uninsured or otherwise. I mean, how far could this go for for the industry as a whole? And is has the industry, I mean, I know the industry has great infrastructure, great regulation as well, but is it going to be able to cope with the weight of demands on it at the moment?
This isn't the first time the UAE's faced adversity. We had floods earlier in the year. We had some rain last year. And for all of us that have been here, you know, a number of years, it feels like it's a lot worse perhaps this time than it has in previous occasions. But I think, you know, once again, the government and the authorities have responded remarkably well. Businesses are back to work, as it were. I think there are still a few unfortunate businesses and individuals who can't get back to their office or their warehouse or their facility or whatever it may be. And the extent of the damage and the cleanup is yet to be seen. So in some cases, you've got companies that were a foot underwater, but actually it's very little damage other than, you know, cleanup. They'll be back operational and there's very little loss. There'll be other businesses where perhaps they've got stock that was stored very low to the ground or on the ground, and that's perished, and they'll be making claims against, you know, loss of stock or business interruption. Companies that have perishable, short shelf life items, be it chilled foods or flowers, you know, things like that, they're going to be hard affected. And this will give everyone the opportunity to do an assessment of their own mitigation. Do they have enough insurance? Do they have the right insurance? I think it's a good opportunity for people to take stock.
All sorts of rumours doing the rounds at the moment. And, you know, you, I and all of us know not to trust in rumours. But, you know, words like force majeure out there, rumours of claims being rejected left, right and centre. Central bank stepping in overnight as well with a remit to banks and insurers. Your reaction to that?
Again, I think it's fantastic. It just gives those people that will probably be impacted the most by this a little bit of respite. You know, there's uncertainty out there. Is my company going to continue? Are they going to pay me? How am I going to make rental payments, mortgage payments, car payments? And I think it's a really positive move. The question would be, are they going to go one step further and almost enforce and ensure that insurance companies are making clients whole if they've lost their vehicles? There's a grey area. If your car is parked, you're probably going to be okay. Mm. If your car's been driven, I think the circumstances of why your vehicle was out on the road in the middle of a storm, it's going to be more heavily scrutinised. Mm. Some will be made whole, some won't, as it stands.
Minute left with you, Son. Premiums. How's this going to impact on premiums moving forward?
So I would say without any doubt, there'll be an impact to premiums. We've seen the motor premiums in general harden over the last 18 months. They're still very affordable when you compare to, say, the UK market. The motor premiums aren't expensive. We don't have things like theft here or vandalism. It's very low compared to other regions. But the losses, there will be an impact to the insurers. Their premiums are going to go up. Their reinsurers will charge them more, and it will ultimately be passed on to us, the consumer, at the end of the day, I'm sure.
This is a developing story, as they say, and I'm sure we'll be calling upon Sonny again for yet more input on this one. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for your reading of the situation. Sonny Ridgewell is the MD, the Managing Director of Benepol, joining us live here in the Business Breakfast studio.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Staying with stock markets, Hamad Ali's here. He's the CEO of the Dubai Financial Market and the Nasdaq Dubai. Ahlan wa sahlan. Nice to have you here, Hamad.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Busy time for you. Spinneys IPO goes live today. I know you're not going to get into the specifics of Spinneys for regulatory reasons. You wouldn't do that as the CEO of the exchange, but why is this significant?
It's important because if we started the capital market reform and an acceleration and a growth plan about a couple of years ago. The government led the IPOs that were to come into the market. And the second horizon of that was to encourage the private sector to benefit from the strength of the market. If we look at the past IPOs we did, the eight IPOs raised about 35 billion dirhams. The amount of demand that these IPOs generated was approximately $1.1 trillion. So where we have a connectivity in the market, we have primary liquidity on the market that can accelerate the growth of private sector businesses. We've done so far two private sector businesses, Ta'lim and Ansari, which was the first family business IPO. To bring in a business such as Spinneys, it does a number of things for the market. One, it proves to the family businesses that the market can support their growth and the market is designed for family businesses as well. The second part is that we're designed for private sector. If you look at Dubai, Dubai is an environment that's designed to serve the growth of the private sector in terms of a scale-up as well as growth aspect. And DFM is no different than that. We're designed to accelerate the growth of a lot of these businesses. To have a Spinneys come in, bring in a new sector that's underrepresented on the market, you bring in a quality business that started from a family point of view, it's a big thing for us. Additionally, it's the second IPO we do this year. We started the year with Parking IPO, which went fantastic. And to have a Spinneys come in, it's an exciting thing for the market.
What can you tell us about the pipeline for 2024 and the type of other companies coming in? And people are generally most excited about the private sector. As you mentioned, Al Ansari, family firm, the first one. And it's been a success over the past year, you would have to say. Spinneys coming next, the Al Bawadi family. What other conversations are you having? They're confidential, I know, in terms of specifics, but in general.
I'll explain to you the themes in terms of what should we expect when it comes to the upcoming transactions on the market. I'll refer back to the government's announcement. The government did announce that they will bring 10 IPOs to the market. So far, we have 6 IPOs that have come to the market. We have another 4 remaining. The government IPOs were quality IPOs and they performed really well during the IPO as well as the secondary part of it. The second element is the discussions we've been having with the private sector. One of the things we did last year was we worked with other authorities such as Dubai Chambers. One major initiative we had was the IPO Accelerator Program. That had about 40 companies participate. A number of those companies that were with us during the Accelerator Program are the ones that we will start seeing them come into the market in the next 18 to 24 months. Some could be earlier on the market. What we're focused on is to look at how do we take that demand that we have on the market and bring in sectors that are underrepresented on the market. So the elements in terms of the upcoming transactions, you'll see there's a big focus on sectors that are not represented on the market. We're taking a view when it comes to how do we want to look at the growth stories on the market as well, because there is a massive regional opportunity for Dubai to play a role in accelerating the growth of these businesses.
What about tech? Hamid, we've been talking today about it's a big week for the Magnificent Seven in the United States. Tesla reporting tonight, Microsoft and others later on this week. We just don't have those kind of tech companies listing in Dubai. We do have the tech companies. You know, we had Careem famously bought out by Uber. We had, you know, Souq.com bought out by Amazon. The guys upstairs, morning, chaps. And there are others as well. You know, Property Finder, you know, Bayut and DeBizzle are talking about an IPO, but we haven't had them yet. What can you tell us about tech?
I think tech and growth sectors, the emerging sectors, the sectors that will be seriously important over the next 5 years is a major focus for us. The main question ends up becoming at which stage do you bring them to the market? Do you bring them at the pre-IPO stage or do you bring them when they're big enough for an IPO to actually happen? You're correct. We do have a number of businesses that out of Dubai are serving the region. We're in discussion with a few of them, and it's about time that some of them will be trading on DFM. The timeline is up to the companies themselves. Where we're focused on, and we'll be making a couple of announcements during the Capital Markets Summit, which take place during May and 2nd in Medina Jumeirah, around what's our view when it comes to tech companies, when it comes to growth companies, and what's our recipe to get involved with these companies early on.
In terms of your role as the CEO of the Dubai Financial Market and Nasdaq Dubai, I mean, you're a listed company yourself. You know, you've got shareholders, you've got a P&L that you run, and there are changes in the stock market scene here. For example, we're seeing just a few weeks ago, Bourse Dubai selling some Nasdaq shares worth $1.6 billion. That's changes. That's related to the United States. We've got two major stock markets here in the UAE, yourselves, the DFM and Abu Dhabi. There's also the Nasdaq Dubai here. How do you see that landscape evolving?
I think I'll expand on that and talk about how many exchanges there are in the region and the opportunities that you have in that space. There are a number of templates you can follow. One of the templates we've been following is building bridges between us and sister entities. They could be exchanges. You can take a view that there is competition. We take a view that even during competition, there is room for collaboration. One of the things we're doing during the summit is we have two of the sessions that we're speaking about. One takes a view of what are the regional opportunities. DFM is participating, and we have a number of peer exchanges from the region participating with us. Then you have, how do you expand beyond the region? What is it that we can do in terms of creating a network for investors? At the end of the day, a market is a marketplace. What decides the relevance of the market is how many investors you bring on board. Today, we're sitting at 200 different nationalities. We're sitting at liquidity, which comes 50% of which comes from outside the UAE. For us, and we've seen the growth in terms of the number of record investors we had in the past 2 years, 73% of them are from outside the region. So we're outside Dubai, international investors. When you look at these numbers and you look at this data, you start realizing that you're not a local exchange. And if you're not a local exchange, you're a regional or a global exchange, then you need to take a global and an international view that that looks at building bridges. And building bridges can take multiple formats. Either you look at products, you look at dual listings, you look at cross connectivity between exchanges. And these are the themes that we're focused on in terms of where we see the road ahead. Is we don't want to be an isolated. We're not an isolated exchange. We should not be an isolated exchange. And we're thinking collaboration, innovation, and then accessibility into the market.
So Dubai, I think it's fair to say, is still the financial and professional services capital of the region. Great things happening in Abu Dhabi and very exciting in Riyadh at the moment. But let's say, for the sake of argument, that it's still Dubai. What's the pipeline like in terms of attracting regional companies to list on Dubai, Kuwaiti companies, Saudi companies, Bahraini companies? And I'm thinking, for example, of Investcorp Capital, high-profile Bahraini company listing in Abu Dhabi. A quick word on that, because we're going to have to take a short break soon.
If you look at the history of the exchange, if you map the majority of the leading regional exchanges, you'll find that in terms of dual listings and regional listings, Dubai takes the top spot. If you look at the regional markets in terms of what's the composition of the products that are listed, in terms of the numerical value, Dubai comes at the top, not only on equity. If you look at Nasdaq Dubai, which is today the biggest fixed income market in the region, and it's the second largest sukuk market in the region, about 55% of the listings we have come from outside. So in terms of practice of attracting international businesses, this is a business as usual for us. We have the infrastructure for it. We've done it in the past. We've been doing it. And where it's relevant, we will do it. Let me elaborate a little bit more on that. I think when you do a dual listing, you need to bring in a company that your investor base can relate to, so that it makes sense. It needs to be something that they either know of, they can value, and they can risk manage from that point of view. So we're open for it. I think it's important, but it's also very important that you don't achieve this from a numerical value by saying 10 dual listings in 1 year, because that's doable. For us, it's been doable. In fact, we had to reject some companies where we saw no relevance for them on the market. When the right story is there and the pipeline has a few good stories that are regional stories, they'll come to the market.
Since you took on the role back in 2021, end of 2021, you have always said that your endeavour to empower new leaders, to bring new leaders to the region as well, using your experience to also encourage more investment into the region. How important is that through the process of the summits? Capital Markets Summit 2024 is back for a second year, which is always a good sign, which means the first year was good. Second year will be bigger and better. Is that a key part of the sort of, dare we say it, marketing policy of DFM moving forward?
I think more than marketing, it's more of it's an engagement. It's for us, the priority is to offer a platform for regional companies and as well as regional participants to come to Dubai and discuss the road ahead, discuss good experiences. What is it that different markets in the region have done really well? What is it that we need to be doing for the road ahead of us? We're expecting changes when it comes to macroeconomic policies over the next couple of years. We had an exceptional past couple of years in terms of interest rates and what happens when we go back to a neutral state. How fast will we go back to a neutral state? And during this transition, what opportunities do we end up seeing? This year, last year, what we did, the focus focus was on bringing in global leaders and companies that could be potential IPOs to initiate a discussion around how will the next 12 months look like in terms of opportunities. This year, we're adding another element. We're doing, the event is much bigger this year. It's taking place on the 1st and the 2nd of May. We have approximately 1,000 participants. We have 80 plus speakers. And the theme for this year will be two main themes. The first is we'll do what we did last year because it did work and it was in big demand, which is the plenary discussions. We're covering topics such as macroeconomics, IPOs. We're then going into financial innovation. We will be announcing a couple of initiatives in terms of what's our articulation for the road ahead. And then you have in parallel, we have what we refer to as the investors hub. Every single fixed income transaction or equity transaction, whenever they're targeting the region, has one leg of the roadshow here in Dubai. And for us, the view is, why not have an annual event in which investors meet with listed companies and companies that are thinking of listing? This is something we're really excited about. We think it will end up becoming one cornerstone of the entire event.
May the 1st, May the 2nd, as you mentioned. Is this by invite only or can people get involved?
It's open for registration, but we go through a process of vetting those who are participating. We want to create a participation that is relevant. Priority goes to the companies that will be listing. We have, in terms of the experts that are participating with us, we have the majority of the financial services leads globally. We're privileged that a number of global heads will be flying into Dubai to interact with the audience during the event. So to answer you in short, it is open for public, but relevant public.
Make sure you register in advance, well in advance. Got a couple of questions coming through, which are sort of in keeping with the conversation we're having here. Here's one coming through from one listener, no name put with this one. On the back of the Spinneys IPO, Hamid, could you tell us what is DFM doing to attract more big UAE families to the stock market? Is that key for growth?
It is. It is key in any jurisdiction. Family businesses are a big pillar when it comes to the economy. And we have a number of fantastic family businesses that are market ready. We did one successfully. We are currently working on a second one, which is a Spinneys that started today. One of the initiatives that we referred to earlier was the IPO Accelerator Program in collaboration with the Dubai Chambers. That's one format we have. And then on the back of that, you have families that are not open to be part of a cohort. So there are one-on-one sessions, workshops, and streams where we take them through what does an IPO mean? It is it an IPO? Is it life as a listed company? What does it change? How is the transition? And many of these companies end up realizing that from a financial point of view, there are benefits. There is a business case in there. But most importantly, from a sustainability point of view and from the adoption of best practices, you end up realizing that whenever you demystify the IPO or life as a listed company, then the conversation ends up shifting toward, instead of why, you look at when and how do we end up doing.
Now, the question has come through a bit more of an international feel, this one. And obviously, we know the efforts that you and your team are putting in to attract international interest and investment. That has seen great results in recent times. Here's a question coming through. We see all these big global hedge funds, Millennium, Citadel, etc., opening offices here in Dubai. Is it your hope that they will be trading the local stock markets as well as the international markets?
I think international institutions are already trading on the local market. If you look at the volume on the market, about 58% of the volume on the market comes from institutions. 50% of that are international institutions on the market. What we're not saying here, we're not saying that we've done the job and that's it, let's focus on other things. This is an ongoing process. One of the things that the market does really well is we, four times a year, we go on key international jurisdictions with some of the top listed companies and interact and engage with asset managers and investors. Last year, we did two trips to the US. We started with the US, ended with the US. We spent time in London. We did Singapore. This year, we'll follow a similar template, but make sure we visit the usual suspects, but also cover additional jurisdictions. And most importantly, we give them the opportunity to come to Dubai. So engagement, education, the trends we're seeing very good steady growth in terms of institutional participation.
Well, Hamid, I'm sure I speak on behalf of all the team here. If you're looking for radio coverage during those roadshows, we're more than happy to help out as well. But we can't thank you enough for coming
thank
in
you for
today
having me
as
this
well.
Morning.
Hamid Ali is the CEO of Dubai Financial Market and the Nasdaq Dubai, joining us live in studio. Thank you, sir.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Where we're talking about the economics of shopping. Shopping for shares of Spinneys because the IPO is out today. The offer period begins and we've had the share price range. It is between, let me get the announcement in front of me, 1 dirham 42 per share and 1 dirham 53 per share with 900 million shares on offer. That values the stake at about 1.4 billion dirhams and the company at up to, at the top end of the range, 5.5 billion dirhams. Joining us in the studio now is Samer Degaili, co-head of investment banking at HSBC for this region. Samer, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. You guys are involved in this. You're the joint global coordinator and joint lead manager for the Spinneys IPO. So what do the numbers tell us, Samer?
Well, to start with, this is a very exciting opportunity. The way we look at it, having done more than 30 deals over the last 3 years, this IPO really stands out for us. The reason being, it's a rare private sector listing in the UAE. What that means to investors investing in UAE IPO markets, well, first of all, it's an amazing sector diversification for investors. The sector is not represented on the exchange. I've seen Hamid Ali earlier on the show. You don't have that sector representation today on the stock exchange. Investors cannot own in the sector. But more importantly, this is a very strong household name in the UAE. So it allows the consumers in the UAE as well to own in a very strong and well-known brand in the UAE. But more importantly, I think what makes it the most exciting, it is a high growth opportunity while complemented with some dividends. It stands out in contrast to a lot of the previous precedent UAE IPOs, which were giving more certainty around cash flows and dividends. There is growth in this story. So for investors investing here, there will be hopefully a capital appreciation that matches the growth in the company.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember one of the, was it the last retail IPO was Marker here in Dubai. And that was 7 or 8 years ago now, maybe even more. And it was a greenfield IPO. Yeah. And they just raised about half a billion dirhams with grand plans. And they went out and bought various retail assets, including Rim Al Bawadi, the restaurant chain, and some sports shops as well. And it just didn't work, did it? But
yeah,
but they started off with nothing and just went out and acquired. This is very different. This is an established business.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. It has a very long track record in the UAE. The assets are bricks and mortar, but as well, they do have an e-commerce business. And for that, I think the business has been growing, have shown a very strong track record in growth. But more importantly, it's promising as well growth going forward. So it will be extremely exciting for the stock market.
What do we know about valuation? So we got the share price range. At the top end, it values Spinneys at 5.5 billion dirhams. When people are deciding whether or not to bid for shares today, they're going to look at, well, what's the revenue? What's the profitability? What's the dividend yield? Those key metrics. What can you tell us?
Well, the most relevant one for this sector and for this name is PE.
That's price to earnings ratio.
That's price to earnings ratio. Today, at the high end of the price range and looking at the consensus of where the research analysts are coming out, this is about 21 PE at the higher end of the range. At this level, we've seen very strong investor demand in the ramp up to the launch announcement last week, but as well to the opening of the books this morning. More importantly, you would have seen we've announced two cornerstones that have signed up as part of this IPO, two very prestigious names, one local and one internationals, would have shown their commitment with $75 million allocation onto the IPO.
And one of them is Franklin Templeton, am I right?
Yeah. One is Franklin Templeton, which is a very well-known global investment organization, but as well EIIC on the local side. This is the strategic arm of National Holding. If you follow National Holding and EIIC, they are actually, they own strategic stakes in Abu Dhabi Islamic Bank and Abu Dhabi National Hotels, which owns very well-known brands in the UAE as well. So the two are very well-known and prestigious investors who have spent some time looking at the opportunity and realizing the growth aspects of it and the value offering. And they've signed up across the range with that commitment. So obviously it's very it's a very important news around the IPO as well. And you would have noticed that since 2021, we haven't seen an international cornerstone signing up to a UAE IPO.
So this is the vote of confidence.
Exactly.
Very quick. We've got about a minute left with you. So many questions coming in. What's going to be the next family firm to list? Are we going to get, you know, an Al-Futtaim, an Altair, whoever it may be? You're not going to give us specifics, but what kind of conversations are you having? Because kind of the first buffalo to cross the river was Al Ansari last year with Exchange, and that went well. Now we've got the Al Bawadi family with Spinneys.
Yeah.
Are we going to see all the buffaloes jump into the river now?
It's definitely building up, and that is a pathfinder for a lot of the family groups out there. I think on our side, the pipeline is building up with a lot of private sector names. Some of them will come next year, but it's definitely looking much more promising than it used to do before.
But how are they going to feel culturally when you get journalists like us scrutinizing it, when you get analysts giving buy-sell-hold recommendations, when you got some 26-year-old analyst giving a sell recommendation on a large family company here in Dubai? Culturally, how will that fit?
See, I mean, our experience with Spin is particularly, the business is run with a management team separate from the family. So for those businesses that have embedded best standard corporate governance will feel extremely comfortable with that setup. I think we've seen the experience of Spin is how they interacted with analysts, with investors throughout. This is a pathfinder for a lot of these family groups to come forward. And if you look at a lot of these prestigious businesses that you've mentioned earlier today, many are not run necessarily by family members. They're actually run by experienced management teams.
Sama, we'll have to leave it there. Busy time for you. The Spinneys IPO is open today. We'll let you get back to the office. Sama De Gailey there, co-head of investment banking for HSBC, joint global coordinator and joint lead manager of the Spinneys IPO. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, talking international stocks now. It's a busy week for the Magnificent Seven. Starting off with Tesla, which reports earnings a little bit later on. Shares down 3% yesterday, down 43% for the year. Could it get even worse tonight? Let's get the thoughts of Jessica Amir now. Jessica is an analyst with the brokerage Moomoo and joins us live on the line from Australia this morning. Hi there, Jessica.
Good morning.
I was following you on X this morning. You say whatever happens with Tesla, it's going to be a wild ride tonight. And you think the stock could be down another 10% by this time tomorrow. Tell us more.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not very good. It's not been a good ride for Tesla shareholders at all this year. I mean, we already know their shares are down 40% this year, but short interest, meaning bets that its shares are going to go down, they're actually the highest since COVID. And this is for a lot of reasons. We know China's smartphone maker Xiaomi, they recently sold out of their debuted EV in the space of 48 hours. That's because, I mean, it rivals Tesla. Their EV charges in 5 minutes. Tesla, if you're lucky, you can charge that on a quick charge in 30 minutes. But there's lots of other fundamentals that are headwinds for Tesla. But let's just think about this. If history repeats itself, Tesla shares could fall 10%. That's a big deal. And would take this year's loss to 50%. So why are we saying that? Well, the last four quarters, Tesla has reported disappointing results, and on average, its shares have fallen 9.3% to 12.5% every time they've reported results over the past four quarters. So they have a history of delivering Debbie Downer results and a disappointing outlook. We already know there's lots of disappointing news that's been baked in. It's just a matter of if revenue and if earnings falls much further than expected. It's probably going to be a bit of a make or break. But the good news is, I guess, if you are a bull and if you are maybe holding Tesla shares like me, I guess there's some good news, and that is earnings are expected to recover later in the year. That's probably for a lot of fundamental reasons. We know Tesla has launched 0% finance in China, so you can buy an EV in China on 0% finance. And they're also cutting costs heavily around the world. But all in all, we're also waiting for that smart, quicker battery that'll hopefully be released later this year. Anyway, the point of the story is expect a share price pullback potentially tonight, and you probably might see some dip buying, and then more likely for its shares to recover later this year, more so probably expected to recover next year. But as the dust settles, consensus is saying that its shares will be 8% higher over the next 12 months.
Jessica, what about the other Magnificent Seven? Because we did have a sell-off last week, didn't we? Even NVIDIA, the darling of artificial intelligence, that stock was down 14.14% last week. And we hear this week we got Meta, we got Alphabet and Microsoft this week.
It's a huge week. So we've got 38% of the S&P 500's market size reporting this week. So it's a huge week. And as you said, Richard, there's been a lot of anticipation about this week. It's not just about earnings coming out, but we've got some huge data points that the whole world is watching. So the Fed's preferred inflation gauge is out this week, and also GDP, economic growth out of the US. The concern is if these blow hotter than expected, then that could also take the icing off the cake of equities yet again. But for now, it looks like FOMO has fueled a lot of buying the dip action ahead of this week's earnings, as you said. So a lot of those Mag 7 names are reporting, and expectations are actually low. So earnings have been downgraded. So essentially think of it like a hurdles bar. So the hurdle bar has been dropped for big tech by 1.7%. So the earnings expectations have been dropped by almost 2%. So essentially it allows for more beats, allows you to jump over that hurdle with ease, and then everyone gets a clap at the end because the earnings beat drives share price growth. And so far this earnings season, we've got only 12 of the top 100 biggest tech stocks have reported, and they've reported earnings growth of 40%. So this is a pretty significant jump. But as I said, earnings have been downgraded. We're expecting to see some surprise and delights in Microsoft, but a lot of expectation is on Meta as well. And I guess Intel, will be a really good indication if we'll see further buying of the dip into those semiconductors, as you said. They've been heavily sold down. Really interesting to point out, though, that the investment world has been driving into the world's biggest ETF that tracks the semiconductor space. That's actually pulled back. So the semiconductor ETF called SOX, S-O-X-X, has pulled back heavily. No surprise on the back of, you know, TSMC, NVIDIA shares falling back. And then we saw a very significant amount of the investment world, fund managers and retail investors buying the dip into SOX, anticipating higher earnings over the year, and just basically essentially betting that the semiconductors have been oversold. So they're just, you know, betting that it's going to be a good year and things aren't that bad. We do know that the big tech giants are spending billions of dollars on AI and chips, and that's what we'll probably get a lot more information on over this coming week.
Jessica, great talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much indeed for joining us live on the line from Sydney. The thoughts of Jessica Amir, market strategist with the online brokerage Moomoo. Tesla earnings out later.
This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.